Well, we're going through a series on the book of Ruth right now, and so this is week three, chapter two. We're in chapter two, and we're going to talk about Boaz. Boaz is entering the scene. Jason did a phenomenal job last week introducing Naomi and Ruth as they went away during a famine. Things went terribly wrong. Naomi ends up losing her husband and then both of her sons. And as she prepares to return back with nothing, then as you guys know, Ruth says, no, absolutely not. I'm going with you. Her other daughter-in-law, Orpah, was also going to come, but Ruth says, no, I got nothing to offer. And so Orpah says, okay, I'll go ahead and return. And with tears, she leaves. She also loved Naomi very much. But Ruth continues on. And so they now have arrived in Bethlehem in Judah. And Bethlehem is a little town, guys. How many of you grew up in a small town? Just raise your hand if you grew up in a small town. A little bit higher. Come on now. Don't act like you're embarrassed about it. There you go. Yeah. Small towns are where it's at. I grew up in a small town. And I feel like as I'm reading this story, I'm like, oh, yeah, that's right. You know, that's exactly how that is. In small towns, everybody does know everybody. You know, that country song, everybody knows everybody. That's true. That is 100% true. We grew up in a little town called Cedarville. It's about 5 hours southeast of here. And when I grew up there was 800 people was the population. And it has continued to thrive and grown down to 600 people now. And so that is a true story. And there's just funny things about a small town. You know, you really do all know each other. And but yeah, I grew up in a quaint little drinking town with a cattle problem. And a couple of you caught that. And if you lived there during the time that I grew up, you either were a rancher, you worked for a rancher, or you worked feeding and providing goods for ranchers. That was where it was at. Eventually, there was a gold mine that opened, you know, about what, 50, 70 miles away? What was it, 50 miles away? Out in Nevada, and that grew the town for a little while, and then it went away, and the town grew back down small again. But you really do know what's going on when you're in a small town. Everybody talks, you know? And I don't know why even people would try to get away with things in a small town, because everybody literally knew everything. And so, you know, it was just crazy, just so crazy. But what I bring that up because sometimes when we read the Bible, I think it's easy to almost like see it as though these weren't real people. Like, oh, well, those were biblical people. No, I mean, yes, they're in the Bible, you know, yeah, they're part of this. But they're real people in real time facing real life just like we are. And they're living in the context and the constraints and the reality of life just like we are. Now, it's a little different in the sense of, you know, they didn't have running water, right? Wi-Fi was really spotty. You know, there are some differences here. But I want to draw attention to the fact that also, and Jason laid this out a little bit last week, but the way that God had provided for people when you become destitute was set up because there was no other backup plan. So this is a time when everybody is you're farming and you're herding sheep. I mean, or cows or whatever else, but it's mostly goats and sheep. So this is an agrarian society, and your sustenance is based on whether or not the crop works out, whether or not the sheep don't get some kind of blight or what have you. And this is real survival, okay? And in that, God has set up a way to take care of the widows, the orphans, and the foreigners. But here's the thing. There's no backup plan. They're either going to live or they're going to die based on how people respond. So I just want to give that as a backdrop. We're in a small town in real life in a patriarchal and patrilineal society that lives by how you're going to eat what you farm and you're going to eat what you're able to grow in keeping your herds alive, all right? And if you get into trouble, you need the people around you to be following what has been set in order. Otherwise, you are going to starve. So this is real life. This is real time. And so let's just begin the story here. Ruth chapter 2, verse 1. Now, Naomi had a relative on her husband's side, a man of standing from the clan of Elimelech, whose name was Boaz. And Ruth, the Moabite, said to Naomi, Let me go to the fields and pick up the leftover grain behind anyone in whose eyes I find favor. What is she talking about? Well, she's talking about what has been set forth by God for the Israelites, for foreigners, widows, and orphans. And in Deuteronomy 14, 17, 22, we see what she's talking about. This is God teaching the nation of Israel how he wants to care for people, how he wants to provide in these when hard things happen. He says this, "Do not deprive the foreigner or the fatherless of justice, or take the cloak of a widow as a pledge." In other words, don't leave her freezing in order to get what she needs. "Remember that you were slaves in Egypt, and the Lord your God redeemed you from there. And that's why I command you to do this. When you're harvesting in your field and you overlook a sheaf, don't go back to get it. Leave it for the foreigner, the fatherless, and the widow, so that the Lord your God may bless you in all the work of your hands." Did you catch that? "Do this, and I will bless you. When you beat the olives from your trees, don't go over the branches a second time. Leave what remains for the foreigner, the fatherless, and the widow. When you harvest the grapes in your vineyard, don't go over the vines again. Leave what remains for the foreigner, the fatherless, and the widow. Remember that you were slaves in Egypt, and that's why I command you to do this." He's saying, you guys remember what it was to be an outsider. You remember what it was to be powerless. You remember what it was to be completely vulnerable to a more powerful group of people, the Egyptians. And I'm telling you, now that you're a nation, now that I've brought you out of Egypt, I want you to make sure that you take care of the foreigner among you, the widow among you, and the fatherless among you. You need to care for them. You need to have a provision so that they don't starve, so that they're not mistreated. And so they're living in this village, and that's what Ruth is talking about. Hey, let me go and glean, because it was the time of the barley harvest. So this is how God has set this up to care for them. Now, Ruth is actually qualifies on every single one of those vulnerable, every vulnerable aspect of that list. That's Ruth. She has left her family and her people. She's an orphan. Her husband has died. She's a widow. And she's from Moab. She is a Moabite in a Israeli nation. So she's all of those things. She's all three. And so as she is going out now to do this, the thing we have to catch here, right, is she's actually completely dependent upon that the people that are living in Bethlehem are actually doing this. Because how many of you guys know, not everybody follows the law. Have you guys ever noticed that? Not everybody's living according to the scriptures, right? We are people of the scriptures, and well, I'll just let that sink in. Okay, so she's in this subsistence society, and she's counting on that she's going to find somebody who's even going to let her glean in the fields. Because there are those that are going to go, you know what? I don't know. Funds are kind of short right now. Remember, food is money. Okay, food is money. It's like somebody coming and saying, hey, I really need a few dollars. You're like, well, I barely made rent this month. I don't know if I can help you out. And so this is the real time for there. It's like, hey, can I have some of that food that you just grew? And you're like, oh, I don't know. I mean, things have been kind of rough. So this is real. This is survival. Ruth chapter 2, we're going to read verse 2 through 5. "And Ruth the Moabite said to Naomi, 'Let me go to the fields and pick up the leftover grain behind anyone in whose eyes I find favor.' And Naomi said to her, 'Go ahead, my daughter.' And so she went out, entered a field, and began to glean behind the harvesters. As it turned out, she was working in a field belonging to Boaz, who was from the clan of Elimelech. And just then, Boaz arrived from Bethlehem and greeted the harvesters. 'The Lord be with you.' 'The Lord bless you,' they answered. And Boaz asked the overseers, the harvesters, 'Who does this young woman belong to?' He sees Ruth out there. 'Who is this young woman gleaning in my field?'" I want you to notice a couple things about Boaz, okay? Because again, I want us to connect with this story, and let's see ourselves in it. Let's see ourselves and learn from what they're doing. The first thing we notice about Boaz, and the writer has already told us, he was a man of standing, which means he had character and he had some means. And so we've seen that in that first verse. But then it says that he comes out to the field and he immediately greets the people that are working for him. "The Lord be with you." He greets them with a blessing. That's a stand-up guy. How many of you guys have ever worked for a boss that doesn't even know you're alive? Right? I mean, it really does hurt your feelings because you're like, dude, I literally have to do what you say every day I have to do it up to your level of what you want from me. If I don't, you certainly are willing to talk to me at that point. But I don't even get a hello. It's an interesting thing when somebody's in a position of authority and influence, how much their neglect or their blessing means. And Boaz is showing that he is generous in his speech towards those that work for him. The Lord bless you. You know, we started off this year with a series on generosity, and I think we see in Boaz and in Ruth this incredible story of their character is marked by their generosity and their faithfulness in the midst of their circumstances. And that's what I intend to kind of point us towards as we look at this. I want us to hear from the Lord through these incredible characters, Boaz and Ruth, in the midst of very normal life in a little town called Bethlehem, or for my purposes, I picture Cedarville. So he greets his workers. He blesses them in the name of the Lord. Yahweh be with you. He blesses them. He also, you notice too, that he knows them and he treats them with respect. Hey, who is that? Who's that young lady over there? Who does she belong to? Where's she from? What's up with her? Now you notice something too about Boaz that I think is very cool. He doesn't say, hey, who's the Moabite working in my field? Did you spot that? He says, who's the young woman? Not who's the Moabite, right? That's an interesting thing about his character. I just want to point that out to you. And so let's continue on with the story. The overseer replied, she's the Moabite who came back from Moab with Naomi. Still no name. Who's this young lady? Oh, she's a Moabite from Moab. Thanks, bud. She said, please let me clean and gather among the sheaves behind the harvesters. And she came into the field and has remained here from the morning until now, except for a short rest in the shelter. What are we seeing here? Ruth is a hard worker. She took one little break. She's been harvesting all day long. But it is interesting. They still don't use her name. They just see her as a foreigner. Oh, she's a foreigner. How many of you guys, right? Again, go back to the small town. It was like, in the town where I grew up, I mean, again, it was, like I said, and these were different times, okay, when I grew up. The Wi-Fi was also spotty. There was no Wi-Fi. But man, if a new girl moved to town, sweet, sassy molassie, it was like a feeding frenzy. Like everybody was like, who's the new girl? Like, what did you see the new, where is she from? Does anybody know what is she like? Is she single? That was probably the first thing. Is she single? It doesn't matter. Who is she? I'm sorry, that sounded dirty, but that's how the town was too. At any rate, it was a small town and it was just like everybody was talking. All right. Well, this is a small town. Everybody's talking. It's like, oh, that's that Moabite. I heard about her, okay? But she's that girl. And here's the thing I want you to catch too, okay? And Amber is going to get into this a little more, so I'm not going to go deep into this. But Moabites were not people that you looked at for Israel. They were those people. They were the other. And they had a reputation that was not good. So being a Moabite was not really what you wanted to be if you were coming into Israel. You might want to be a different foreigner than that. So you're already a foreigner, but this is kind of one of the worst ones. So there would be some assumptions about her character based on where she was from. How many of you guys have ever had people make assumptions about you based on where you're from, right? So she's experiencing this. Let's continue. But they are saying, okay, but she's pretty impressive. She came in here and she has just not stopped gleaning. She took one little short break and she is just on it. This girl can work. This is my kind of people. All right. So Boaz said to, so we're going to go verse 8 here. So Boaz said to Ruth, my daughter, listen to me. Don't go and glean in another field and don't go away from here. Stay here with the women who work for me. And watch the field where the men are harvesting and follow along after the women. I've told the men not to lay a hand on you. And whenever you're thirsty, go ahead and get a drink from the water jars that the men have filled. So he's esteeming her. He's like, hey, you don't have to go find some water somewhere else. You can go ahead and you can drink from the water that these guys have brought. But there's a couple interesting things that are happening here that Boaz is doing. The first thing is that Boaz is actually doing the scriptures. Leviticus 19, 33 through 34 says this. When a foreigner resides among you in your land, don't mistreat them. The foreigner residing among you must be treated as your native born. Love them as yourself, for you were foreigners in Egypt, and I am the Lord your God. Boaz is responding out of his character and his relationship with the Lord. It's already said that he's a man of standing. He's a man of virtue. We're seeing a man of faithfulness and generosity. And he's continuing forward in this with Ruth. And we see that in the way that he's talking to her. We see that in the way that he's talking to his employees, his people. And he's actually doing those things that were commanded. And now, remember the backdrop here is that this is in the time where previously, before we get into Ruth, this is during the time where everyone did what was right in their own eyes. This is in a time where everywhere around them, and also within Bethlehem to some extent, because I'm going to speak to that in a moment, everybody is working on their own sliding scale of morals. They're all doing things according to what seems best to them. How many of you have ever done something in the way that seemed best to you? And it was a great idea until you brought it to someone else. And they're like, well, and you're like, gosh, I guess it's not as virtuous as I thought, was it? Yeah, and that's on a good day. So there is not a lot of people doing the right thing at this time. But here's Boaz, this incredible example of someone who in real time, in a small town, is being faithful with what God has given him. And here's this young lady. He just found out she's from Moab. He's heard about her. But he is doing the exact thing that God asked him to do. And you notice that he says this too. He goes, don't go away from this field. Stay in this field. And also, I've told my men that are harvesting not to lay a hand on you. What's that tell us? He's protecting her. And he's protecting her for a very real reason. She is a foreigner. She is a woman. She is unaffiliated. She's vulnerable to being raped. And, you know, she needs protection. And she finds protection in Boaz's field. And he says, stay here because I'm going to make sure you stay protected. But even within his own people, he had to go ahead and he was being proactive to be generous and faithful to say, I'm going to make sure that these guys don't mess with you. You're off limits. You're going to get treated like a daughter of Israel here. You're not just somebody that's like, oh, well, we can do what we want with this person. They have less rights than these other Israelites. You see that? I love that part of the story. And I guess I want to say too, as we're here now, okay, we're here right now. But we also need to be aware and use our positions of influence and responsibility to protect the vulnerable among us. You know, we look back at that and go, oh my gosh, that was so terrible that they could just do that, that somebody could be out and about and then they could end up getting, you know, molested by these other workers or what have you. But you guys, we still, in this day and age, need to continue to be diligent and be looking for the vulnerable among us, because you guys know 1 in 3 women gets molested. That means there's some of you in this room right now that you were hurt and you didn't get protected. And I want you to know that we want to look out for you. And if you're in a situation right now where you are currently being hurt and you think that there's no one to talk to, I want you to know you can come and talk to Janelle or Karen or me or Jason or whoever it is that you feel safe to come and talk to. And we're going to come alongside of you. And we're not going to tell you it's your fault. And we're not going to tell you that you probably misunderstood it. We're going to do a great job of protecting you and coming alongside and finding a way to walk you out of a situation where you're being hurt. God cares about you and he sees you. And we want to see you too. And you don't have to stay in that situation. We'll be with you. And every one of us We're all called to be a Boaz for one another. Yeah. At this chapter 10 here, she says, well, you realize we're in Ruth. I'm going to stop saying that. It says it in front of me, and I keep saying it. Oh, by the way, we're in Ruth. At this, she bowed down with her face to the ground, and she asked him, why have I found such favor in your eyes that you notice me, a foreigner? And Boaz replied, I've been told about what you have done for your mother-in-law since the death of your husband. How you left your father and mother and your homeland, and you came to live with a people that you didn't know before. May the Lord repay you. May the Lord repay you for what you have done. May you be richly rewarded by the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to take refuge. Do you catch what Boaz is doing? He's saying, listen, you're in my field, but what you need to understand is you're in God's field. You're under my protection, but what I want you to understand is you are under God's protection. You landed in my field because God is looking out for you. He has seen what you've done with your powerlessness and how you came along and gave Naomi what you did have to offer. You came with her on this dangerous journey into Bethlehem. You stuck with her even though there's no promise. And now here you are working in the heat of the day to provide food for your mother-in-law who can't provide food for herself. And let me tell you something. God sees you and I see you. You have found shelter under his wings. So Boaz is being faithful, but he's saying, I'm reflecting merely the faithfulness of my good God in whom I trust and believe. And I'm telling you, that's where you have found yourself. And her character and her faithfulness has opened up that door that Boaz is like, I've heard about you, lady. You're awesome. I've heard about your character. And I love that he gets there's this opportunity where he's demonstrating a willingness to let Ruth's character, not her situation, not her ethnicity, not any other thing, cause him to assume. He's letting her actions and words speak for who she is. He's demonstrating that generosity of assumptions. He's demonstrating the generosity of a good faith reading. He's not leading in and going, well, the first thing I know about you is you're a Moabite. We all know how they are. We'll get into that. No, he's leaning in and saying, I'm going to be generous with my good faith reading on who you are and what you're about, because all I know is that you're here. I know that you're from Moab, but that's all I know. I know you came with Naomi, and as he begins to dig in, as he begins to ask, he begins to find out who this person is. He's showing this. Do you see that? That faithfulness, that generosity in doing that? And, you know, how many of us make snap decisions about one another without digging in? How many of us are not like Boaz? We're very quick to be like, okay, well, I know who you voted for, and that's all I really need to know, right? I know where you're from. That's all I really need to know. You know what? I got burned by somebody who had the same color skin as you, so I'm just telling you, we're starting from less than zero, right? These are very real things that happen to us as humans, and without the intervention of our good God, we're going to continue to judge one another by those very things. And Boaz is showing a different way. He's going, okay, you're an outsider, but that's all I know about you. And so what I'm going to do is I'm going to follow and I'm going to demonstrate God's heart by inviting you in. Jason talked last week, right, about the Bet Ob. I'm inviting you in to the home of God's wings. He hasn't invited her all the way into his home yet, but he has invited her into the field. He's invited her into the clan, as it were. He is saying, you are a daughter of the Most High God. You found shelter as a part of his family. Do you see that? He's bringing the outsider in. So Ruth, oh wait, hang on, I jumped ahead. Okay, so then it's verse 14. At mealtime, Boaz said to her, come over here and have some bread and dip it in the wine vinegar. And when she sat down with the harvesters, he offered her some roasted grain. And she ate all she wanted and had some left over. So here we go. Now he's saying, come eat with us. How powerful is that, right? It's like you can say like, oh yeah, I got lots of friends that aren't anything like me. Have they sat at your table and eaten food with you? Because that's some next level goodness of getting to know one another, right? It's like when I invite you over to my house, or if you invite me and I come to yours, when we break bread with each other, that's some next level invitation. of reaching out to someone who's an outsider and making them an insider, inviting them in. So Boaz is demonstrating this generosity in this space. He's being faithful. So she eats all she wants. She has some left over. And as she got up to glean, verse 15, Boaz gave orders to his men, "Let her gather among the sheaves and don't reprimand her. And even pull some stalks for her from the bundles and leave them for her to pick up. And don't rebuke her." Now he's just blessing her. Now he's just blessing, like, girl, you are working hard. I know why you're doing it. You're doing it for Naomi. That's incredible. And so what's he doing? Boaz is also reaching out, and he knows who Naomi is. And he's like, if you're blessing Naomi, oh, it's on. I'm going to bless Naomi. She's my people. And if you're blessing her, wow, like, of course I'm going to want to bless you too. So now he's teaming up. So Ruth gleaned in the field until evening, and then she threshed the barley she had gathered, and it amounted to about an ephah, which is like 30 pounds. So that's a ton of grain for gleaning. That's way more than you would find if you were gleaning in one day. And so she carried it back to town, and her mother-in-law saw how much she had gathered, and Ruth also brought out and gave her what she had left over after she had eaten enough. So she brought some lunch too. She was like, well, here's the grain, and then also here's some lunch, Mom. So how cool is that? Her mother-in-law asks her, where did you glean today? This is above and beyond. You show up with 30 pounds of barley. You bring me lunch from In-N-Out. I mean, this is very cool. Where did you work? Blessed be the man who took notice of you. And then Ruth told her mother-in-law about the one at whose place she had been working. The name of the man I worked with today is Boaz, she said. The Lord bless him, Naomi said to her daughter-in-law. He has not stopped showing his kindness to the living and the dead. Do you see what's happening with Naomi? Through Ruth's faithfulness to go and work. Because did you catch, now again, real people in real time. Ruth is going out into the fields to ask strangers, as a foreigner, she's completely vulnerable, no protection, to go ask strangers if she can glean in their field in order to provide for her mother-in-law, whom she loves, Naomi. But this is not without risk to her own personal well-being. As we just saw, Boaz was like, hey, stay in my field because you might get raped if you go in another field. Like, you're in a vulnerable position. Ruth already knew this when she left that morning, that she was risking her own well-being in order to provide for herself and her mother-in-law. She's a pretty awesome lady. There's some courage going on. And what I want you to catch is that Ruth is in a vulnerable position. She's in a place of weakness. She doesn't have a lot of power. What she has is the ability to work and to be righteous and to be faithful with what she does have. And what does she do? She heads out and does the one thing she can do, which is go glean, and hopes that there's someone else that's out there doing the thing they can do, which is let you glean. And she finds that space. But I want you to see that Ruth is being faithful and generous with what she does have in spite of a big list of what she doesn't have. And some of you are in here and you probably identify more with Ruth right now than you do with Boaz. You're like, man, I am not in a power position. You know, I don't have workers that I can tell them to buck up and bless people. You know, I'm not the person of standing in my little town of Junction City or my little town of Eugene or Cheshire or wherever you hang your hat, because we all have hats and we hang them. But what I want you to catch is that Ruth takes what she does have and she's faithful and generous with it. And God sees it and he partners with her. And now you see what's happening is that Naomi says, the Lord bless him. He has not stopped showing his kindness to the living and to the dead. Naomi's starting to get some hope. You remember Naomi left. She said, I went away full. I came back empty. My name's not Naomi anymore. My name is Mara. Look at what God has done to me. So she feels cursed by God. But as Ruth is doing what she can do, as she's stewarding what she does have, in spite of what she doesn't, the Lord is beginning to crack open the door here. And Naomi, this looks like a glimmer of hope. What do you guys think? And she added, that man is our close relative. He's one of the guardian redeemers. He's a kinsman redeemer. He's someone from our clan that could actually redeem us from our destitute situation, where we are without sons, we are without protection, we are without husbands, we are without provision. You happened to have stumbled into the field of a very short list of people, I think two, actually, and you found one of them. And Naomi's going, there might be hope. There might be hope. Now, who did that come through? It came through Boaz. It came through Ruth. And it's God whose wings they have all found refuge under. God is partnering with Ruth and Boaz's faithfulness, and something's starting to change. So then Ruth the Moabite said, he even said to me, stay with my workers until they finish harvesting all my grain. And Naomi said to Ruth, her daughter-in-law, it'll be good for you, my daughter, to go with the women who work for him, because in someone else's field you might be harmed. Again, it's a dangerous situation. And so Ruth stayed close to the women of Boaz to glean until the barley and wheat harvests were finished, and she lived with her mother-in-law. Ruth is showing generosity and faithfulness as one who has no power and as an outsider. She's courageous. She's putting herself in harm's way to work all day to provide for her mother-in-law and herself, and God notices. Some of you are in that situation where you feel powerless, but I want to encourage you that as you do what you can with what you have in real time, God notices. It is under his wing that you are, and he has not forgotten you. He will continue to bring his help and hope, and most of it is going to come through his people. Boaz is showing generosity and faithfulness as one who has power and is an insider. He's being generous and faithful with stewarding the things that are entrusted to him, protecting Ruth, who's the vulnerable one, as well as Naomi, his relative, and he's providing for his family, and he's providing for his workers, and he's leading them in faithfulness. And you know what? God notices. We know the end of this story. These people, God has included them in his story. And we know that at the end of this, Jesus Christ himself comes through the lineage of Boaz and Ruth the Moabitess. They don't know that. They're living in a small town trying to stay alive. But God is noticing them and saying, I'm going to write your story to encourage Joshua Rivas and his amazing family here at Christ Center in 2025 for who I am and how faithful I am. And I want you to know, if you want to know what faithfulness looks like, if you're a person of influence or if you're a person of no influence, if you're an insider or if you're an outsider, I want to give you a demonstration of how to live in real time, in a real life, in this place. And I'm going to write it down through the story of these two regular people just like us, in a little town just like us, with real problems just like us, so they can lean in and go, God, if you did it like that with them, I want to learn from them and I want to do the same. Can you guys receive that? So let me ask you this. Josh, would you come on up? How are we doing? How are we doing? I want us to just reflect for a moment. How are we doing with our power? You know, everyone here right now, guys, even in the midst of your context, you might be the poorest person in this room. But if you own a car, you're in the 5% richest people in the entire world. So I'm just saying, you're a Boaz and you're a Ruth. You might be a Ruth in one context, you're a Boaz in another. Our level of poverty, most of us are not at a sustenance level of poverty. So I'm just saying, wherever you are, you're somebody's Boaz. You have somebody that you can bless, that you have power to take them from the outside and bring them in. You're not only in that position. However, you also are a Ruth. Every one of us has situations where we're absolutely powerless, and we are the outsider, and we are completely limited in what we can do, and we don't know what the next step is. But you are not without choices. You can still be faithful and generous in spite of what you don't have with what you do, and God sees it. And he'll give you what that next thing is. And it might be, I want you to get up and I want you to go out and I want you to make yourself vulnerable and see if there's a field you can glean in. Now, I don't know what that looks like in real time for you, but I think even as I'm saying that, it's probably occurring to you right now, like, well, I could do this one thing. And you know your own situation. So I want to take just a moment here, and I want us to ask the Lord, okay, Lord, you've called me to be generous and faithful, whether I'm in the places where I'm a Boaz and the places where I'm a Ruth. What do you want to talk to me about right now? What do you want to bring into my heart right now? Holy Spirit, highlight to me what you have for me in the story of Ruth chapter 2 today. We're just going to take a moment of silence, and I want you to just let the Lord speak to you. Let's just go vertical and let him speak to each of us as to what he has to say. And then we'll wrap up with prayer.